afternoon, after which we will be doing some questions and answers, so hopefully many of you who are here now can stay. Our final case of the day is In Re Interest of Elena S. Counsel?
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Mike Ziske, and I am representing Curtis Hillebrand, who is asking this court to find that the lower court erred in terminating his parental rights to his daughter, Elena S., a daughter who was taken by the state from his care when she was only 16 days old. And since that fateful day on July 21, 2017, the state has deprived Mr. Hillebrand of any opportunity to parent his child, hold her, or even lay eyes on her.
Well, isn't it true that he hasn't been able to parent for the most part because he's been incarcerated?
That is correct, Your Honor. Mr. Hillebrand was incarcerated during the entirety of this case, but as the court is aware, incarceration cannot be the sole basis of the state seeking termination of someone's parental rights.
What efforts, if any, did he make to contact his daughter, check up on his daughter, those types of things?
Well, of course, as the court's aware, the initial filing of the first motion to terminate parental rights, the state filed that less than 5 months after the case was filed. So Elena was only less than 5 months old at that time. Obviously, she's nonverbal. He did testify that he had very limited opportunities being incarcerated to have any contact. He had limited funds or no funds, really, to write letters, get stamps, make phone calls that were not collect. I think as the record reflects, the case manager, Molly Cunningham in the case, Mr. Hillebrand was initially in the Cass County Jail for about the first 2 to 3 months of this case, and then was transferred to the Nebraska Department of Corrections in Lincoln. The only time that Ms. Cunningham visited him was in the Cass County Jail, I believe she said 2 or 3 times. He did ask to have visits with Elena while he was in the county jail, but jail policy was that the visit could only occur with inmates between glass, and the trial court ruled that Mr. Hillebrand could not have visits based on those circumstances, did not feel apparently that would be in the child's best interest. But he did ask, once he was transferred to Lincoln, the state basically, in our opinion, their efforts, the reasonable efforts, really diminished to no efforts. Ms. Cunningham did not go visit Mr. Hillebrand at all while he was in Lincoln. I think she wrote him 2 letters the entire time that he was in Lincoln, and then later transferred on a parole violation out of Missouri to a facility in St. Joseph, Missouri.
Well, can we talk about best interest for a minute here?
Sure.
Isn't there evidence that your client and this baby's mom had the child born in their home and failed to take the child for any medical care for her life those 60 days? Because they were concerned the child would be tested positive for some kind of drugs. And they'd been through that before. And your client in particular had 6 prior children terminated. So
I think that is alleged by the state that was the reason they did not seek parental care or medical care for the child. But I think there was testimony that they were in the process of getting to that the child was born in home, and the doctor who examined the child after the state took her into their custody testified that the child was in remarkably good health.
Which was really good news, other than she tested positive for amphetamine, methamphetamine, and THC.
And again, and the doctor did testify that she could not testify as to how the child came into tested positive for those substances, what contact she may have had and who that was from, either the mother or the father.
But methamphetamine was found in the home, in fact, in proximity to where your client was arrested.
A very small amount, yes, in a closet. which the child obviously had no access to, being obviously a newborn. Mr. Hillebrand, again, best interest of the child, you know, even if the state proves that a statutory basis exists for terminating parental rights, the state also has to show that it is in the child's best interest based on unfitness of the parent. We submit that the state did not prove that Mr. Hillebrand was unfit, that he did, you know, his criminal record was very limited, other than this issue in Missouri, which was a property crime, I believe, for which he had a parole violation for leaving Missouri and coming to Nebraska.
Well, he was on probation. He violated probation, so then he had to serve some time.
Did have to finish
right?
Some time.
So he served time, was on parole, violated parole, and that's why the warrant issued for which he was arrested in Nebraska.
That is correct.
So,
but again, none of those crimes that Mr. Hillebrand committed, I guess, would submit, affected the child, his ability to parent a child, that that it was not, again, as far as best interests are concerned, I think the state, unfitness of a parent, I would submit is a very high burden for the state to show, that, they have to show that, other than, not just merely that someone has a criminal record or has committed crimes, but that, that it's, his overall, ability to parent, and his overall,
Well, you said something in your brief that struck me. You said that the fact that he's had parental rights terminated to other children should not be some sort of scarlet letter that brands him for life as an unsuitable parent. And I think we would all agree with that, but the question is, how many opportunities do you give a person to redirect their life so that they can responsibly parent? And is it fair to this child to try again, given the facts that were offered in evidence?
And again, we would submit that the state, in showed its hand early on by filing this motion to terminate parental rights less than 5 months into the case, not giving Mr. Hillebrand really any opportunity to demonstrate his parental abilities. The state also knew, well into the case that Mr. Hillebrand was going to be able to parole, I believe, in January of 2018. The hearing in the case was in December of 2017. November 2017. The ruling came out in December. So it wasn't, Mr. Hillebrand was not asking the state or the court to wait an extended amount of time.
Was it 2018 or 2019?
19.
That
I'm sorry,
19.
Released.
Okay.
19, yes, you're correct. I apologize.
Right.
2019.
Was there evidence as to how old these prior children were the rights? I guess my question is what is the track record over a few years' time or over many years' time?
There were, I believe, six children, and I think it was over about a 10-year period, if I recall. I know there was testimony about their ages, but it had been at least several years, I believe, since the last child's his rights were terminated to that case before Elena was born.
Was there evidence of efforts he had made while in prison to try to improve himself and his abilities once he was out?
Well, again, based on the initial case plan that the state prepared and the court accepted, he obtained a substance abuse evaluation initially right off the bat and a psychological evaluation right off the bat. The psychological evaluation recommended a psychiatric evaluation. The state basically kind of put that aside by saying that they couldn't find a psychiatrist to come into the jail to examine him. So I would submit that they kind of shirked their duties in that regard. Mr. Hillebrand also testified that he took whatever classes he could while in prison, including a anxiety management course, as well as some restorative justice classes and NAA meetings that he was allowed to attend. You know, obviously, substance use, he testified, I believe, that he was not able to get into any substance use programs, as, of course, probably aware that those are very popular programs and very difficult to get in if you're not going to be in prison for a very long time. So we're asking the court to find that the trial court erred in finding Mr. Hillebrand's rights should be terminated, that he was unfit, and that it was in Elena's best interest for him for that to occur. Thank you. If there's no more questions.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Sarah Sutter. I'm a deputy Cass County attorney, and I represent the appellee, the state of Nebraska, in this matter. And the state is respectfully requesting that this court affirm the ruling of the trial court, which terminated the parental rights of Curtis to Elena.
Can you tell us what efforts the state made to provide services
to Curtis?
Mm-hmm.
When Curtis was incarcerated in the Cass County Jail for approximately probably about 3 or 4 months, they found a provider who was able to go into the jail and perform a psychological and a chemical dependency evaluation inside of the jail. The department made attempts to arrange for a psychiatrist to get into the jail to perform a psychiatric evaluation, which was a recommendation of one of the prior evaluations. However, they were not able to find a psychiatrist that would go into the jail to perform that evaluation. And I think you'll see that in a lot of cases where parents are incarcerated, is the department is kind of at the mercy of these correctional facilities, where they have to abide by the visitation rules and the rules of the facilities. And also when there's recommendations for services for these parents, they have difficulties finding providers that will go into a correctional facility to provide these services. These service providers typically aren't parties to these actions. They can't be ordered by the court to go into these facilities and perform these services for these parents. So I think in this case, the department did as much as it could, given the limitations of Curtis's incarceration, in order to provide these services to Curtis. In addition to the evaluations, there's a testimony as to the efforts that the department made to keep in contact with Curtis while he was incarcerated. As you're aware, he was in three different correctional facilities during the pendency of this case. He was in the Cass County Jail. He was transported to the Department of Corrections in Lincoln, I think approximately October or November of 2017. And then he was transferred from Lincoln to the correctional facility in Missouri, where he remained the date of this trial in approximately January of 2018.
Why not wait until there's evidence he would be released in January of 2019? Why the rush to the termination?
Just for a little history for the court, I was not the counsel that filed the initial motion to terminate parental rights or the amended motion to terminate parental rights. Based on my review and my knowledge of the case, I think it had a lot to do with Curtis's history as a parent. And by the time there was the trial for the motion to terminate parental rights, Elena had already been out of home for a 16-month continuous period of time. If the court would have said, hey, let's wait another 2 months, she would have been out of home for 18 months at the time Curtis was paroled. And then there's no evidence to show that Curtis would have been in any, that he would have been in any position to assume any sort of care or custody for Elena upon his release at that 18-month mark. So
more services would have been available. I mean, what's a parent to do if a provider won't go into a facility where they're incarcerated?
I think, one, that a parent should attempt to take advantage of any services or classes or any treatment programs in a correctional facility that they can.
And did he not do that here? He did the anxiety test, he did the
He provided proof that he completed restorative justice hours as well as the anxiety management group. He testified that he went to AA or NA meetings, but he didn't provide any sort of signed cards, or he wasn't able to articulate how many or how often or when he went to those. And another thing I think that's important when a parent is incarcerated is maintaining contact with the department to show that continuing interest in your child. And Curtis, once he left the Cass County Jail, the department did not receive any communications from him whatsoever, despite their continued efforts to try to make contact with him or his case managers while he was both incarcerated in Lincoln and in Missouri.
So he appeared telephonically because he was incarcerated at the time of the termination hearing. He testified that he did try to contact the caseworker, which the caseworker then rebutted, apparently, that wasn't true from her perspective, anyway. Is that for the judge to decide, then, who to believe?
I think that rests with the discretion of the trial court. They're able to observe the witnesses, and I think that this court is allowed to give deference to the trial court in making that determination. I think it's reasonable to think that if Curtis had sent the letters and made the phone calls that he claims to have made, that he would have made some contact with the department. He would have reached someone. A letter would have reached someone. I think it's also important to note that he did admit to writing letters to the children's mother, or excuse me, to Elena's mother while he was incarcerated. So he had the means to do so, and it just, from the state's perspective, shows that he was more interested in maintaining a relationship with his child's mother than he was in maintaining any sort of contact or keeping any sort of interest in her case while he was incarcerated.
But we do have a de novo review here, so we look at the record independently of what the juvenile court may have decided.
Correct. That's correct, Your Honor. I would also like to address the issue of Curtis's prior parenting. And I think there's an interplay there with the permanency and the fact that children cannot and should not be suspended in foster care or be made to wait uncertain parental maturity. And I think if there was ever a case that showed or illustrated this concept of uncertain parental maturity, it's this case. Elena is the eighth child that was born to Curtis. Six of those children, Curtis had the parental rights to six of those other children terminated, and the seventh child, the oldest child, is in a guardianship type arrangement with, I think, his mother or another relative. So of those six children to whom Curtis no longer has his parental rights, per his testimony at trial, those rights were terminated in approximately 2014 or 2015. And I don't have the ages here in front of me, but there was testimony elicited from Curtis as to, I think, their ages when those parental rights were terminated. As far as the youngest of those six children, the two youngest, there are certified copies in the court's record of the termination orders for those two children. And those termination orders were entered in May of 2016.
Is that out of the Kansas court?
Yes, I think it was Brown County, Kansas. Curtis testified that the oldest of those two children had only lived with Curtis and Brianna for a few months, and the younger of those two children had never lived with Curtis and Brianna, having been removed from their custody as an infant in the hospital after birth. So the May 2016 termination was a little over a year before Elena was born. So comparing the history of the prior terminations and lining that up with what we know of his criminal history that's in the record, his 2014 conviction of a felony theft in Missouri, and then he was placed on probation. He violated that probation in 2015 and was resentenced to prison. He was released from prison and placed on parole, and he violated that parole by absconding to Nebraska in 2016 and had a warrant for his arrest in 2017.
So he has this history.
Yes.
What could he have done while incarcerated to satisfy the state that he should be given further opportunity to try to parent? What could he have done?
I think the biggest thing, I recognize that given Elena's age, that he could have or should have done is maintain contact with the department, inquire about Elena's developmental milestones, acknowledge her birthday.
Yeah, and so I recall that the foster mother testified that he made no contact. Does the record reflect whether he had contact information to reach out to the foster parent?
In the record, there were, I believe, two exhibits. There was a letter from the caseworker that had a case plan court report attached, and on the cover of that case plan court report states the name and the address of the foster parent of the child's placement. And so he would have had that, at least that case plan sent to him twice. The worker testified that she sent that particular case plan to him twice. So he did have the contact information.
And he wasn't prohibited from reaching out.
There were no orders or anything prohibiting him from contacting the foster parents. And if there's no further questions, I would ask that the court affirm the lower court's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for appearing here today. And the matter is submitted. And